The following podcast has not been paid for by the New World Order.
The following podcast is for people who grew up in the 90s. Wherever you are right now, you're about to be transported back in time. And get ready for a nostalgia-filled trip down memory lane with the 90s Today podcast, where we talk about the 90s today. And by the way, do you love orange sodas? Because we do. And here it goes with your hosts, Brandon and James.
Hey, you wild and crazy 90s kids. You're listening to the Nostalgia Mothership known as the 90s Today. I am your host, Brandon, and we are talking to, of course, my co-host,
James.
So, James, we're going to do the very start of this podcast. We're going to call it
It Came from the 90s.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about Toys R Us a little further. We've been talking about Toys R Us every time that the podcast has came on the air here recently. But apparently, the Toys R Us in the UK is going up, too. Bankruptcy. Mm. And it's very possible they may close all of those stores and sell off. They have Toys R Us in, you know, South Korea and different places in Asia. And apparently, they may even sell off those divisions as well. If that happens, and with our, you know, already 100-plus stores already been announced closing in this new 200-plus stores that they've talked about now for the U.S. market, That really doesn't bode well for Toys R Us, as far as it even existing.
Nah, it's gone. No, unless they have some private investor want to come in buy something, but no, it's gone, man.
What's interesting is when Toys R Us, if that happens, KB Toys will also be for sale in a way.
Yeah.
So I wonder if any nostalgic millionaire would like to buy the trademark rights to KB Toys. And opening up America's Toy Store again.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, you're talking about Slice. What, last weekend, 2 weekends ago, some entrepreneur bought that out. It's going to make it independent of Pepsi. So, I mean, to quote one of the little boys from Angels in the Outfield, it could happen.
Well, what other, do you have any other things to talk about that came from the 90s and as a, go ahead.
I actually found this out. It's not news, but I'm going to a convention in June, and the convention is called Fanboy Expo, and it's going to be in Knoxville. And I found out, of course, there's going to be a lot of 90s stars there, people who have done a lot of stuff from 90s media. But one of the cool things that I saw, and I don't know the person's name, but the guy who did a majority of all the Goosebumps covers, the guy that painted all the covers of Goosebumps,
yeah,
back when we were kids, is going to be at this convention.
Wow.
And I'm like,
that's awesome.
Holy crap. And artists will most likely sell prints of their artwork. So I'm like, I'm hoping that, you know, I might be able to purchase a few prints of some of my favorite book covers, you know, like Haunted Mask and The Girl Who Cried Monster. And like Attack of Jack-O-Lanterns or something. It'd be so cool to have that signed and framed. So, who knows? That's actually really cool. I saw that. I'm like, man, Brandon would love that.
I would love that.
Yeah. So there you go. That's my bit of a.
All right, guys. It is wrestling month. We're going to be talking about WCW and WWF.
Yeah, get that E out of here.
So basically, we're going to be talking, starting this off with the Monday Night Wars. And when we all think of the Monday Night Wars, we think of January 4th, when TNA Impact went up against WWE Monday Night Raw. Because it showed the debut of Scott Hall, Shawn Michaels, Eric Bischoff, Nasty Boy, Sting, Jeff Hardy, Jeff Jarrett even, and more. Went up against WWE Raw. And that's when they brought back Bret Hart.
Right. Yeah.
But
yeah, that's probably the closest thing that we're going to get in maybe our lifetime. I remember that night. Where I was watching it at, we recorded Raw and we watched TNA Impact instead. And it was a pretty darn good show. If I'm not mistaken, didn't RVD win the TNA World Heavyweight Championship that night, or am I thinking of some other night?
I can't remember.
I don't know.
But I'm just kind of joking here.
Yeah, I know. That was a big night for me. I thought it was cool.
Yeah. So obviously we're talking about WCW Monday Nitro and WWF Monday Night Raw. I didn't watch, you might could talk about I started watching in 1997, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
When was it? Do you remember if it was 97 for when Eric Bischoff was revealed to be a part of the New World Order by Roddy Piper? Was that 97 or 96?
I want to say it was 96, man. I don't know dates.
I know. I believe that was October 1996. I'm pretty sure. Because a friend, see, I watched WWF when, I never actually watched WWF before. I remember WrestleMania 3 being on in the background as a kid on the big screen TV. But as far as anything since then, I was in junior high and some friends were wearing the black and white New World Order t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what is that? And they were like, oh, you got to be watching this. This is awesome. What channel does it come on? TNT. It's called WCW Monday Nitro. And I went home, looked at the TV guide, and or I either looked at the TV guide or there was a channel. Wasn't there a channel that showed the guide at all times back then?
I can't remember if they had it back then, but yes, there was. There was one. There was at one point it was called the TV Guide channel. But yes, there was something like that.
So I went home, you know, looked at the TV Guide channel, and I watched it, and it was awesome. It was completely new to me, wrestling, and I just enjoyed seeing the NWO really coming in and just taking over.
Mm-hmm.
The fans were into it, the crowd, the atmosphere, the excitement, the announcers, just everything just drew me in. And from that point on, I learned now by looking it up on the Google, November 18th, 1996. So I started watching in 1996 for some reason. You know, I mean, anybody listening remember when Roddy Piper came out and Eric Bischoff was talking about signing Roddy Piper to a contract, but Roddy Piper came out and said he revealed at the end that Eric Bischoff was part of the New World Order. Then out comes Hogan and the rest of the 5,000 NWO members to come out there and hold Roddy Piper down while Hogan slaps him around, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Rowdy Piper, he was a rowdy guy, wasn't he? I mean, he lived up to his name in that ring.
I mean, you talk about just pure energy in one person. I mean, yeah, Ultimate Warrior had, you know, a whole bunch of just energy, but Piper had that type of energy that, you know, kind of came out verbally, whereas, you know, Ultimate Warrior is more of the physical energy. Yeah, Piper just could not be contained, man. He was a loose cannon. You know, people talk about, you know, Brian Pillman and Dean Ambrose being, you know, just off the rockers and stuff. No, man, like Piper was it. Piper was first. Side note, I look back at his career now, and he was, I mean, to know that he was one of the best talkers, a smooth wrestler, and never held the big one in WWF. And that's just, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Now, another guy, you know, we were talking about Roddy Piper and his intenseness in his promos, and I believe it was Ric Flair. So many times that man's face would turn red and that one vein on his head would just be popping out. He just looked like he was literally going to faint in that ring because he just got so intensely into it. And that brought the audience into him to believe what he was saying, you know, and just brought a lot of legitimacy to what he was saying. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Promo. You know me, I don't like Ric Flair at all.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that later, how you don't like him. But but I have since, you know, well, I'm going to ask, okay, I told you how I got into wrestling. How did you get into wrestling, and how did you get into the Monday Night Wars?
Well, I got into wrestling twice. I don't remember how I got into it the first time, but I was, you know, I watched that real cartoon WWF stuff like Ultimate Warrior, Dusty Rhodes with the polka dots, Von Erich, but you know, as the Tennessee Tornado, and during the Hulkamania stage, I remember all that. I had the WWF Hasbro figures. I even went to a house show. I tried to pinpoint the right date. I just can't remember. Well, I don't know. I guess I just grew out of it, and I ended up becoming a friend with a kid around 96, 97, and he was real big into wrestling. And I went over to his house one night, where his parents had ordered Bash at the Beach for him. And I guess it was Bash at the Beach 98, if I'm not mistaken. And I was like, oh man, this actually looks pretty cool. And then he explained to me who Goldberg was. I was like, man, he's never lost. He's like, yeah, man, he's never lost a match. And I'm like, oh my God, Goldberg is unbeatable. So I went home and started watching Nitro. And then my dad, who's always been a wrestling fan, but he probably wouldn't use the word fan to describe himself, but he is a wrestling fan.
So we would watch it.
I started watching in 98, man. So I watched in the early, in like 90, 91, then I quit, and then I started rewatching in 98. So wow. I missed a lot of stuff.
You did.
I know. I missed all the good stuff, but you know, it's one of the great things about the WWE Network and on the DVDs that they've put out. You know, I can go back and I can not relive, but I can attempt to live what I missed, in the 90s. But yeah, I started watching, I started watching the B show. Let's be honest. I started watching the B show Nitro, you know, after the whole Attitude stuff started coming out. But yeah, that's what I started watching, man.
Wow. I mean, I've seen Monday Nitro in our local area, and I've also been to Bash at the Beach 1997, a year after Hulk Hogan turned heel.
That's pretty cool, dude. Like,
oh, it was awesome. I mean, I got to see the wrestlers were at the Marriott. Mm-hmm. I got to see the Giant. The Giant is huge in real life. I mean, of course, you know he's big. But if you're just you're next to him, I watched him. He walked because the Marriott was across the street. And this is Daytona Beach, of course. I believe it's across the street from the event center. I believe at the time. So the Giant was walking across the street. It was just interesting to see someone you've seen on television, and Rick Steiner got in the elevator and was barking roof 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 as the elevator went up. And we were all tons of wrestlers. In fact, Eric Bischoff and J.J. Dillon, me and my dad went up too, and I shook Eric Bischoff's hand and J.J. Dillon's hand, and my dad did too. And my dad had a rather lengthy conversation with Eric Bischoff. And we just stood over there with him while we watched a lot of the other wrestlers come in.
That's actually pretty neat, man. I think I've heard some of that story. I didn't know that it was, you know, that you actually got to meet some folks. That's actually really cool. Did you get an autograph?
No, that's the thing. I don't.
Oh my God. How can you? Oh man, Brandon.
No pictures or anything. I do have proof that I went though. I still have my tickets. But
oh, that's cool. You need to get those framed.
I have my
man,
WCW Money Nitro cool. tickets, and I have my Bash at the Beach tickets. But yeah, it was really awesome. And my favorite wrestler at the time was Sting. I would just screaming when Sting came out of those rafters, or when you'd see Sting way up in the rafters, you know, watching what was going on. Either it be the New World Order in the ring or just some random crap match. Sting. I remember the audience; they would all turn around. Or you've been watching, okay, you're just watching some squash match and you notice the audience is standing up. You're like, oh my goodness, is the NWO coming to the ring or Sting up in the rafters? It was crazy back then.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome. And, I'm getting ahead of myself, but a lot of people don't, the time that you watched it, you know, when WCW Monday Nitro changed its set, the current set, the first set, you know, the one that I like. And they changed to that big WCW symbol that I believe it opened.
That happened way later though. Two years later or something like that. It happened around the time that they released that Ready to Rumble film.
Well, I found something, I was going through an old VHS tape and I found something that a lot of people don't remember, and I thought about uploading it to YouTube. It was an episode of WCW Monday Nitro. But it was on DirecTV, and you bought it for $4.99, and we bought it one time, and I barely had a memory of this, but it's called WCW Backstage Blast, and it started with two announcers. It was everybody's got a prize, Ted DiBiase, and a guy I didn't know, and then, you know, you also had Tony Schiavone and I believe Bobby the Brain Heenan, but these guys were announcing, and then they would turn it over to Tony Schiavone, and they would talk about, you know, what was going on live that you saw on TNT. And then when the commercials was supposed to start, we didn't have to watch commercials. So instead of watching commercials, who was watching it on DirecTV through the pay-per-view program, kind of, we got to see backstage interviews and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
And the thing about it was, and I went and read that the people who they did backstage interviews wasn't scripted. They allowed the talent to say whatever they wanted to say. And it's a really interesting show to, you got to see people who usually don't get an interview and they just talk.
That's a really cool concept.
That it was called WCW Backstage Blast. It was $4.99 every Monday. You had to buy it through DirecTV's pay-per-view thing. And, we've got the entire episode on VHS.
My God. Imagine being a hardcore wrestling fan. Imagine how much change you would put down on something like that annually. That's nuts.
As far as I know, we only bought that one.
Lord, do you remember the WCW hotline?
I never called it. The Mean Gene used to come out all the time.
My Lord, I'm totally getting off topic here, but there was a teacher at my junior high school. He would walk into the office, call that hotline on the office's phone, and let me listen to it because I was an office aide. And then he would just hang up and leave.
And he's sitting there charging the school?
Yes.
Did anybody ever find out about that?
I have no idea, but he used to crack me up.
I wonder what they actually said on that hotline.
Oh, it was just, I can't even remember. It was probably just a bunch of crap.
But going back to the topic about the Monday Night the Monday Night Wars, I went back and watched, because this is a little bit before I started watching. And basically there is a match going on in the ring, and I can't remember the guys' names, but Scott Hall walks through the audience, to the crowd.
Yeah.
He goes over the guardrail, and Tony Schiavone's noticing all this, but Larry Sabisco's just kind of, you know, not understanding what Tony Schiavone's talking about at first. But he goes into the ring, and he uses the Razor Ramon voice, too, you know. And he gets in there, and he's basically saying, you know who we are. Is this where the big boys play? WCW. He's acting as if he's from the WWF.
Yeah.
And later on, of course, he talks about his big buddy's going to join him, and Kevin Nash ends up coming. So it appears as if to everyone that the WWF is invading. And at the time, you know, you can't, like, to now, if that was to happen, we'd top it in and,
yeah.
Dave Meltzer would have already said it was going to happen two weeks ago. but then it was just like, whoa, is this real? To them, you know, I hadn't yet joined wrestling yet, but it was interesting. And then the way the New World Order used to come up and attack the announcers at the announce table, or they would just go in and just destroy things that, you know, you weren't used to it at that time. You just weren't used to it. Going in and spray painting NWO on the backs of people. Spray painting the legendary big gold belt NWO. Hogan did that.
Yeah, he did. Totally defaced it.
But, so what's your memories on some of that?
Well, I mean, like I
maybe
said,
not so
I,
much
I
memories, but what you went back and watched as well.
Right. The biggest thing about all that is that you talk about, you know, Scott Hall, and then you talk about Kevin Nash, both known formally as, you know, Razor Ramon and Diesel in the WWF. But the way that they portrayed it, they didn't portray it as them, you know, being mysterious tag partners, or they didn't build up, you know, they didn't have previously done vignettes where, you know, it talks about the buildup of some huge acquisition that's going to come into WCW. No, these guys just showed up. And there was, and the way that they made them talk, yeah, it created buzz that, yeah, oh my God, is the WWF really invading Nitro? Are they really invading WCW? And there was such, it created such a moment of, you know, yeah, wrestling is staged, but it's just crossing over. Like where does kayfabe in reality, where does this draw the line at? And nobody really could really pinpoint it. Like, because it was to that point, it seemed legit. I watch it now, and of course, you know, knowing what I know now, but still, just you look at it and watch it today, and it's it was successful. They did a darn good job of making the regular Mark, the regular wrestling fan, kind of fall for it, and it succeeded on every level.
You know, when Jim Ross announced on Monday Night Raw that Diesel and Razor Ramon was coming back, mm-hmm. you know, and as we know, WCW actually believed that possibly Scott Hall and Kevin Nash just signed back a deal with the WWF, that they literally got raises. For nothing. And they laugh about that, how awesome it was. And then out comes Diesel, which is Kane. Yeah. And I forget who the other guy was.
Glenn Jacobs is Kane's name. Yeah,
I'm talking about Razor Ramon.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I have no idea who portrayed the fake Razor Ramon.
They went on to wrestle a little bit after that, but that's a funny story that they go back and tell.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And of course, WCW would think they would do that because I don't think they really trusted Hall and Nash, especially Nash. Nash is a businessman, dude. Nash is a smart dude.
And me, you know what? WCW made it can't miss because I didn't know what the NWO was going to do. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you can miss Raw now.
Yeah.
I mean. There is very few times where anything happens that's similar. I mean, the last NWO type thing that happened in WWE was the Nexus coming out and, you know, destroying John Cena and ripping up the ring and destroying and beating up the, like, the guy that's Justin Roberts, you know?
Yeah.
And although, I mean, that's the last thing that's ever happened with them that's similar to the New World Order is the Nexus.
Yeah, and it sucks because, you know, a lot of people like the Nexus. I did not. I had no investment in those characters, and that's why, to me, that angle did not work. That's why, you know, it really didn't work for WWF either because, you know, you compare the Nexus to the NWO. Well, the NWO had star power behind it. Nexus didn't. Not at all. The only thing that didn't happen in WWF, the only thing that even has come remotely close to the NWO has been the Aces and Eights and TNA, but of course we won't really talk about that too much, but that was a little bit more successful than what the Nexus could ever pull off in WWE.
So, I remember, see, Nitro started at 8, Raw didn't start till 9.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I would pick which show I was going to record.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was fun. I mean, I'd be like, okay, everybody knew it too. I was like, okay, Nitro's starting in 5 minutes, and we'd go down there and we'd all watch it. And then upstairs I'd have Raw tape it on the recorder, or Nitro, depending on which one I was watching.
That's how I used to do it too.
I thought it was interesting how WCW used to give away all the things that would happen on Raw when Raw was still taped.
I mean, honestly, that's Vince's fault. I mean, come on.
Now the one thing that went in WWF's favor was when Tony Schiavone said that Cactus Jack was going to win the world title, and he was like, ah, that'll put a lot of butts in seats, and it did. They said that nearly like 70 or 80% of WCW's audience turned over to the WWF to see Cactus Jack win the world. Was he Mick Foley? He was Mick Foley. He's Mick Foley. He wrestled as Cactus Jack with WCW, and mm-hmm. he won the WWF World Heavyweight Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, if you, and here's a sharp contrast. You would go back and watch Mick Foley winning that title, and look at that audience going insane.
Yeah, he's
you had JR announcing. You had, I mean, now go watch last Monday's Raw. Totally different audience. Did you ever think that, you know, WWF was attitude, and so many people watched it. What did he get, 6.1 ratings and stuff like that, 7.1s? I mean, it was big time stuff. Did you ever think of it would get the way it is today?
Honestly, no. I mean, compared to what I watched, No, because, I mean, the product that we watched was so exciting, so risque. Of course, I'm talking about WWF at this point. Yeah, so exciting, so risque, so violent. And you kind of think to yourself, like, you know, there's no other way this can go but up. And wow, boy, were we wrong if we to ever think that, because it has totally turned, you know, 180. It's flipped 180 and it's gone, it went in a completely different direction. And that happened about the mid 2000s, really.
Yeah, and I want to go. See, I've mostly been talking about WCW. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about the WWF Attitude next Saturday.
All right.
And talk a little bit more about WCW as they slowly decline.
Sad.
It is a sad deal. I mean, WCW, I'll just say this really quick. WCW couldn't do what WWF was doing because of, standards and practices and Time Warner.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. They just couldn't compete. And there's so much to talk about, and we'll get into that next week. So, James, do you have any more things you want to say to add in there?
No, I'm really looking forward to doing this month's podcast. Like you said, Brandon, you and I are huge wrestling fans, and no studying or pre-reading required for these. These are podcasts that are going to come easy to us.
That's right, guys. So if you enjoyed this podcast, go back and listen to some other ones. We talk about, you know, Nickelodeon and TGIF and Kids Mills and movies and everything from the 90s. So just go to the90stoday.com, listen to our back episodes. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, Podbean, all kinds of different ways. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at The 90s Today. James, where can they find you at?
At Real James Wooten.
And if you got any suggestions or anything you want to add to our wrestling month, do that, and we may shout you out on the podcast. We may, answer your question. We would like for someone to do that. Just get in touch with us on Twitter at the aforementioned usernames. So that's it. James, you want to sign us off with something?
Ooh, yeah.
Hey, James, wake up. The show's over.
Oh, yeah, kick it.
The 90s Today was not recorded in front of a live studio audience at Nickelodeon Studios at Universal Studios Orlando.